The first recording of the brain's electrical activity was made in 1924 by the German psychiatrist Hans Berger. This new technology was initially met with skepticism and ridicule by the medical establishment, but electroencephalography gradually became an indispensable tool for diagnosing seizure activity in patients with epilepsy. Berger discovered that different brainwave patterns reflected different mental activities. For example, trying to solve a math problem resulted in bursts at a moderately fast frequency band known as beta. He hoped that eventually science would be able to correlate different psychiatric problems with specific EEG irregularities. This expectation was fueled by the first reports on EEG patterns in behavior problem children in 1938. Most of these hyperactive and impulsive children had slower than normal waves in their frontal lobes. This finding has been reproduced innumerable times since then, and in 2013, slow wave prefrontal activity was certified by the Food and Drug Administration as a biomarker for ADHD. Slow frontal lobe electrical activity explains why these kids have poor executive functioning. Their rational brains lack proper control over their emotional brains, which also occurs when abuse and trauma have made the emotional centers hyper-alert to danger and organized for fight or flight. Early in my career, I also hoped that the EEG might help us to make better diagnoses. And between 1980 and 1990, I sent many of my patients to get EEGs to determine if their emotional instability was rooted in neurological abnormalities. The reports usually came back with the phrase, "nonspecific temporal lobe abnormalities." This told me very little. And because at that time, the only way we could change these ambiguous patterns was with drugs that had more side effects than benefits, I gave up doing routine EEGs on my patients. Then in 2000, a study by my friend Alexander McFarlane and his associates, researchers in Adelaide, Australia, rekindled my interest, as it documented clear differences in information processing between traumatized subjects and a group of normal Australians. The researchers used a standardized test called the oddball paradigm, in which subjects are asked to detect the item that doesn't fit in a series of otherwise related images, like a trumpet in a group of tables and chairs. None of the images was related to trauma. In the normal group, key parts of the brain work together to produce a coherent pattern of filtering, focus, and analysis. In contrast, the brain waves of traumatized subjects were more loosely coordinated and failed to come together into a coherent pattern. Specifically, they did not generate the brainwave pattern that helps people pay attention on the task at hand by filtering out irrelevant information. In addition, the core information processing configuration of the brain was poorly defined. The depth of the wave terminates how well we are able to take in and analyze new data. This was important new information about how traumatized people process non-traumatic information that has profound implications for understanding day-to-day information processing.